B-Pod Studios.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
I know the starters aren't playing, but I'm just looking to hook up for some other Eagles fans down there and just, you know, just see some live football action. It's going to be hot, not the best conditions, but it'll be a good bonding trip.
All right.
But, I was hoping at least when Winston would start, you know, and play a couple series, but like with all these, you know, with the injury to Sutfield, I don't think, you know, I know he's not going to play, but.
Yeah, I don't know how many starters you're going to get, Mike. So that's the shame of it. But enjoy the experience. Bonding with the son, there's nothing better than that, especially over a sporting event, drinking some beers for the first time. His son just turned 21, so he's having his first beer.
Definitely his first beer.
Yeah, I said that, Mike kind of was like, yeah, what are you talking about? Yeah,
of course
it kind of felt weird.
Of course it's his first beer.
I think my kid may have had a beer or so before he turned 21. Both of my kids that are
no
huh.
Kyle doesn't look like a kid that would like a beer.
I think he loves a beer. Yeah, but what can you do? So yeah, Eagles tomorrow night. I have never felt so deflated about a preseason that as I do this.
Yeah,
we can
ask our next guest about it because yeah. I mean, this kind of is the new norm for the preseason. Last year, the Rams, you know, trotted out no one, and they ended up making the Super Bowl.
Yes, they did.
Tom Brady still ended up playing, and they also made the Super Bowl. Yeah, so I don't think there's a right or wrong answer. I think it's just down to the individual and the team.
Yeah, well, I don't like the way the individuals at the Eagles are handling it, but that's just me. And you're listening to 97.5 The Fanatic, WPEN, Burlington, Philadelphia, broadcasting from the Xfinity Studio, only from Comcast. The 7 a.m. hour was brought to you by Univest Bank. Handle all your banking remotely with Univest's mobile platform. Easy, convenient, and secure. Live life, stay connected with Univest Bank. And on the line right now, and all our Fanatic guests appear on the Comcast Business Hotline, is Adam Schefter, who is brought to you by the Minimally Invasive Spine Institute at Rothman Orthopedics. Minimally invasive, maximally effective, rothmanspine.com. Adam Schefter, how are you today, buddy?
Good morning, Bob, Trey, Jamie in Philadelphia.
Good morning, Adam. Good morning.
You sound very serious today, Schefty. The marathon of fantasy football, you know, did that get to you?
Well, it's a long couple of days. There's no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's exactly hard work. But, you know, it was the fourth year of it. And it used to be, back in the day, that they made Matthew Berry and I stay up for the whole thing, the first 2 years. And now you're doing hits at, you know, 3:30 in the morning, talking about sleeper running backs when you're the one who's really
sleeping
at that point. And you don't get to shower or brush your teeth for a couple of days. And it's just like, and then you're wiped out the rest of the week. And that's the way you start the season. Like, well, what are we doing this
week? It's like training camp.
Yeah, like, what are we doing? Like, yeah, 2 days. Like, what's going on here? And so last year they said, you know what, we're going to let you go back to the hotel like 1 a.m. You got to be back at 6. So in all honesty, you get the, you know, 4 hours of rest in between. You get a shower, you get to brush your teeth, you get to feel like a person. It just changes the experience. It's still a long 2 days, but it's not as bad as it was the first couple of years when literally you weren't allowed to leave, that you were chained to the studios.
It says to me you're getting soft, Schefty.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, not gonna lie about that.
Kind of on that line, I've let it be known over the last couple of days that I'm really kind of soured on the way the Eagles are handling preseason, and that they're holding out Carson Wentz. It looks like they're going to hold out almost all of their starters preseason, not playing in any games. They're going to get their work in amongst themselves, and then they have Baltimore coming in later on this week. It's becoming more.
Why does that make you sour?
Well, because I want to see these guys play, and it's just me. It's a personal feeling. I came on Monday.
Let me ask you a question. If they went out there and they gave you your wish, and in the first series something happened to Miles Sanders or Alshon Jeffrey across, how would you feel about that?
I hear you, but you can't let the fear of injury rule your day. Now, Schefty, again, this is just my feeling. I woke up on Monday, and I really felt this way. And it was kind of festering all weekend. Yeah. I just don't like the approach of the fear of the injury, because I was always taught, growing up playing sports and coaching like I did, fearing injury or playing not to get injured, to me, always lends to it happening even more.
You're thinking of it being fear of injury when I just think of it as being intelligent.
Yeah, I understand that. And I'm not, again, I'm not saying that I'm right. It's just the feeling that I have. But yeah. My question to you is...
Let me just, before you ask me that question, I would just say, like, look at how training camp and has changed, how practices are run compared to how they were.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I was regularly covering a football beat, which I stopped doing in 2004, one team, it was two-a-day practices for like three straight weeks. I mean, these guys would clobber each other. And now, in the new CBA, everything is lightened up.
Right.
I don't think there are any more two-a-day practices. I don't think.
No, it's not.
They do the one long, like, three-hour practice occasionally.
You go out there, and there was certainly not a lot of hitting. I remember one time, and Trey was probably on the team, going to Lehigh. What town was that in?
Bethlehem.
Bethlehem, where the Eagles were training. And I remember it was a Sunday I was there, and I walked out to the field, and, I mean, guys are blowing each other up. Like, I was amazed.
Mm-hmm.
And well, that is the way that it was. That is not the way it is today.
Right.
And so, to me, teams are, it's not that they're fearful of injuries, even though they are. Well, I think we're both right. They're fearful of injuries, but they're being smart and they're preserving guys.
Yeah, you know what? That makes me want to ask you, Shefty, and I'm sure, I don't know if you have the data on this, but I wonder if there was less injury back then when they were hitting each other hard than there is now that they're not hitting each other hard, doing two-a-days, and not playing in preseasons. I wonder what the stat is on that.
I don't know the stat.
Yeah.
But I would just say that teams are doing what they think is best. But what was your initial question there, Bob?
So what I was going to ask you, with the Eagles, they're not going to play many starters hardly at all. Last year, the Rams, Jared Goff didn't get a snap in the preseason. It seems to be kind of trending. Could the NFL start getting worried about this?
Well, listen, I don't think the NFL is worried about it. I think the NFL is completely aware of the fact that everybody wants the preseason reduced, if not eliminated, and that there's this opportunity here where I don't think the league feels good about charging fans regular season prices for two home preseason games as it does. I don't think that the league wants to have four preseason games when the next CBA is completed. And I think that all sides are trying to figure out what's the best route to take going forward so that when the next CBA comes about after this one's up in 2 years, is it two preseason games? Is it one preseason game? Is it no preseason games? Does that add on a week to the regular season? Does that add on a week to the postseason? Does that do both? 17 games for each team, 7 teams advancing to the playoffs in each conference. Again, this is what the league is left to sift through, but I think that the preseason, it's just a squandered opportunity right now. I think everybody recognizes that, and I think that they are figuring out how to reconfigure that to maximize it for its best meaning and value.
Yeah. Adam, can you update us on the Dallas Cowboys situation? Because from afar, obviously, Zeke is, to our knowledge, still in Mexico. I don't know how often they're talking, if they're getting close. You know, Amari Cooper has, you know, it's been known that he wants to be one of the higher paid wide receivers in the league. Dak, obviously, this past week, the rumors are out. Jerry and him going back and forth in the media with the dollar amount. And then you got, you know, your Jalen Smith's coming up, your Byron Jones is coming up. What is their salary cap situation? What's the news with Ezekiel Elliott and Dak Prescott from this past week? Can you kind of just walk us through their situation?
Well, the Cowboys are in Hawaii. Zeke is in Cabo, so everyone's having a great time this summer, but no one's getting a lot done. And so you've got a situation here where I really don't believe with Zeke Elliott that this is at a critical juncture for another 10 or so days. And I would think that it'll just sit there just the way it has. And that when we get to, let's just say, August 24th, right after the third preseason game, before the fourth preseason game, we've now entered into an area where both sides have to get something done. And I've said all along, both sides are right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the Cowboys can get to the Super Bowl without Zeke, and Zeke knows it, so he's withholding his services, which is the most leverage he has. Mm-hmm. And the Dallas Cowboys have him under contract for 2 years and then could franchise him for up to 3 more years, so they could make the argument they control his rights for 5 years. Why should we have to do anything severe. And then both sides can say, well, Zeke can say, Todd Gurley got paid, I want a Todd Gurley contract. And the Cowboys can say, well, Todd Gurley got paid, and we don't want to give you a Todd Gurley contract. So, I mean, we can go back and forth in this. The bottom line is they're not anywhere right now. And I know that they keep saying it's not a big deal, it's not a big deal, but it wasn't a big deal on June 14th, and then it was a little bit of a bigger deal on July 14th, and now we get to August 14th, and I think it's an even bigger deal. But the real critical stretch will be in 10 days if and when these guys, two sides can sit down and see if they could figure out their differences, which right now they can't.
And what do you make of the Dak Prescott kind of back and forth with Jerry through the media, the $40 million, $30 million, you know, all of that? Where do you think that stands?
Absolutely no, nothing. It means nothing to me. I mean,
just negotiation.
You know, oh, please. I mean,
he probably wants to settle around 35, so I'd imagine that's why he's shooting for 40.
Well, hold on. I mean, when you're doing negotiation, Trey Thomas could have asked for $50 million a year, and so that would have been a good headline in the Philadelphia papers. Trey Thomas wants $50 million a year. Guess what? I want $50 million a year. Anybody wants 50. Like, you could ask for whatever you want. Doesn't mean you're getting it.
Where do you think he ends up, I guess, is the question.
Well, you know, Stephen Jones has already said that they've made him an offer to be one of the five highest paid quarterbacks in football, which would put him in the $30 million range. And I guess once we get there, I mean, outside really the player and the agent and the team, like, who really cares? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, at some point they're going to get that deal done for Dak. Okay, he's a fourth round pick who hasn't made real NFL money. He's playing in a state where there's no state tax, so the contract is even more lucrative. I don't know whether the deal is going to come in at 30 or 31 or 32 or whatever the number is. And frankly, I don't really think it means very much to anyone but the agent and the team. So Dak Prescott is going to have enough money to pay for the children of his children's children when this deal gets done.
Yeah.
And then Amari Cooper's got a foot injury that has some plantar fascia to it and some potential ligament damage there. And it's not a long-term injury, and they're not overly concerned, but it's still a foot injury, and he's been out of practice for a week. And that contract, I don't think it's done, you know, for a while. I mean, that one is not the priority that Zeke and Dak are right now.
All right, Shifty, we're going to leave you with this one. It's kind of an NBA question, so put on that cap if you don't mind. Our own Jamie Lynch could have had a possibility of getting owner's tickets, Milwaukee Bucks owner's tickets on Christmas Day to see the Sixers and Bucks play. He could go with a few friends, I think maybe a relative, whatever. However, it is his daughter's first Christmas.
Mm.
Your advice to Mr. Lynch.
How long have you been married for now, Jamie?
5 years, but we've been together like 14.
Yeah. Listen, what a tremendous opportunity to go on the owner's tickets. And what a great game that would be. And I don't know if you know, but it's going to be on TV. I think it's going to be on ESPN. And I don't know your wife or girlfriend or the mother of your child, but I would just say to you that that first Christmas, take pictures of that. Stay home for that. Don't do anything stupid, Jamie. Come on, man.
There you go.
I hear you, Adam. Now that you've spoken it, I got to follow.
Shefty's on it. All right, Shefty, thanks so much. We will talk to you next week. Try to recover, get some sleep, and hopefully a lot of happenings in the NFL this week.
Yeah, you got it, guys. I appreciate it. We'll talk next Wednesday.
All right, you got it, buddy. Yeah, thank you so much. All right, so a lot of happenings going on throughout the NFL, and it'll be interesting to see how soon do they come out and then talk about what's going on or what's not going on in the preseason so far. Time at the Fanatic, 8:13.
Farsetta and Trey in the morning.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Morning show, 97.5 The Fanatic. Bob Cooney here with Trey Thomas, Jamie Lynch, Pat Egan producing. Sam Wilson on the updates. We got some Charlie Manuel talk going on. I said from the beginning of the day, I love the move. I'll take Charlie as my hitting coach every day of the week. No question about it. But is this an admission by the organization that the way they were going was totally the wrong way to go? Because I think Charlie Manuel's philosophy is probably a lot different than what was being preached before. So,
well, I don't think this is an admission by the front office.
Ownership, I'm sorry.
No, but I think there's a major difference there. I don't think the front office was willing to admit they were whatever was it wasn't happening.
No, okay, so I'm saying then Middleton.
Yeah,
is this an admission by Middleton? That's what I mean. Yeah.
Well, whether it's an admission or not, you know, accountability, and he's saying this isn't good enough. This isn't working.
Right.
Somebody's got to be a sacrificial lamb here.
Right. So, and that's what we had somebody tweet in saying, look, they did the right thing because things weren't going good. They were only getting worse, so they made a change. I agree with that.
I feel like Matt Klentak doesn't want to admit that it wasn't working.
So my problem here is that, and I'm kind of not explaining it great, I don't think, is that they went all in this offseason. Well, they did it all wrong then. They went in, they got all this hitting, but they were teaching it all wrong. So now it's almost you have to scrape and start over again. So to me, it means by going with Charlie Manuel, that means the writing's on the wall for Klentak and Kapler? Is that fair to say?
But to say that they went about it all, I mean, as a player, you have to do what works for you. And I feel like with Bryce Harper, all of those years that put him in position to earn 30 mil a year. I mean, even when I went to Jacksonville, the offensive line coach was Andy Heck down there, and he was teaching some stuff that I just was like, nah, man, I've done this way for 11 years. There's no way I'm going to do that because that's not going to work for me. And I stuck to what I knew.
Right.
So you can't blame the player. Yeah, you know, everything. I'm glad that they went and brought in Charlie Manuel. I think you needed someone that can go in and really reach these guys on a different level. I don't know if Gabe's message has starting to drown out a little bit, but you have just sitting across from Charlie, you can tell that his message is going to be totally different from what Gabe would give.
Right. And in what ways, from what you gleaned from him when he was here 2 weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
To me, it seems more simplicity, right?
Yeah, just go hit the ball. You might need to swing a little earlier or change your stance a little bit. I remember one thing that, when Bryce was through batting practice, he said, okay, you know what? I have to take the bat off his shoulder, you know, to kind of be in a little bit more of a ready stance. So, you know, just those little things that can kind of help you get into the zone a little quicker. You know, there you go. I mean, and it just could be very small things to kind of help you get there. Instead of, you know, paying attention to all the other stuff.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I think that the more you can simplify things, the less a Reese Hoskins has to think, the less a Bryce Harper. Bryce Harper, Andrew Salchunas came up with this great stat yesterday. 0-0 counts. He's hitting .450-something. But Gabe praised him after last night's game for his first at-bat, working 11 pitches, although he struck out.
Yeah, I was going to say, how'd that end?
That is such...
I don't care about working counts anymore.
Set the tone for the game. An 11-pitch strikeout the game set a tone?
You know what else sets the tone? A leadoff home run.
Yeah.
Or a leadoff double.
Anything.
I don't need home run. Yeah.
I don't give a damn that did it affect Jose Quintana the rest of the game when he threw a career-high strikeout?
14 strikeouts.
With 14?
20,
no,
15.
It didn't.
Yeah.
You got lucky that JT Realmuto actually had a nice piece of hitting and had an oppo boppo, as Tom McCarthy likes to say.
15 of their 24 outs last night were strikeouts. At one point, 14 of their 18 outs were strikeouts.
So working counts, most overrated thing in the world. I just stop.
Yeah, I'm tired of the offensive philosophy, and I'm glad Charlie Manuel's here. Dan from Abington, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Dan?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good.
So the manual thing I like, but it concerns me only that it makes me think that either that they're not too bright, the front office. And it's only because, and the only reason I say this is because they've essentially put their manager, who they just gave an extension to, who I'm not a fan of, don't get me wrong, into a position where if they do well, it's because they brought in Charlie Manuel. And if they don't, Charlie Manuel is not going to get any blame. And they're going to be like, Capper sucks because they didn't get any better. So he's in like completely like a no-win position at this point. Like there's nothing he can do to get you know, come out of this looking good. It's either going to be he looks terrible like he does now, or Now he's got Charlie breathing down his neck because everybody's like, hey, brought Charlie Manuel in, and now look, they made the playoffs.
Yeah, Gabe, but Gabe's in a lose-lose situation here.
Yeah, he can't win. Like, you know, I wonder, like, you know, what he thinks in his head, like, if he's getting his resume together or whatever, because regardless of what the front office says, Middleton, who's the guy who really matters as far as opinion,
right,
seems to be saying, like, look, my man, like, you might... This might be the end for you, slowly and painfully. At the very least, he's made the fans turn on him even more at this point, because now you got Charlie there sitting in the dugout with him.
Yeah. What is the best thing for Gabe Kapler moving forward? That they stay what they are? Yeah. I mean, you're right, Dan. You put it perfectly. It's a lose-lose situation for him right now.
Yeah. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, any sort of positive benefit at this point forward is going to be solely attributed to,
no question,
you know, Charlie Manuel being there. And I like it because I can't stand the front office and Gabe annoys me. So that's fine with me. But I'm just saying for Gabe himself, it's just a bad place to be in.
Yeah. It's not good. Dan, do you have tickets to FanFest?
I do.
All right. Good man. Can't wait to see you there, buddy.
What if Gabe takes this as like a, because he's a type of person at the end of his season, he sent out all of these questionnaires to see how he can get better as a coach and all of this other, you know.
He's got like an anonymous tip box in the locker room.
How can I do my job better?
So if he takes this as a time to just try to soak up as much as he can from Charlie, what if he uses this as an excellent mentoring session and pull as much of Charlie out of him as he can and try to bring some of that to his coaching style?
It's time for me to change my ways.
Yeah.
I don't think Gabe is dumb enough to ignore Charlie here. I think he's going to embrace the advice. I think he's... Look, I don't think Charlie takes a job unless he knows he can get his way.
Mm-hmm.
Charlie's not going to come in here... Like,
he's not going to answer to Gabe.
Exactly.
Right.
Like, Charlie's going... You want me to be the hitting coach, huh? Well,
I got this.
That's my domain. Nobody comes in my domain and tells me how to do my thing. Like, that's my product. I want full control. And I'm sure he was granted that. Otherwise, he probably doesn't take it.
Right.
So I think Gabe is, I don't want to say neutered in a way with the hitting. And I don't think Charlie's going to have complete lineup carte blanche. But, you know, I think Gabe realizes, like, all right, I can't really step on Charlie's toes here.
And I don't think Charlie's going to come in and try to step on his toes either.
I don't think he's a professional coach. Yeah, I agree with you on that. Like, Charlie, I'm sure, respects Gabe. You know, Gabe was a longtime player. Charlie was a player. There's that mutual respect for sure.
Right.
I'm not trying to say that, you know, they hate each other and they're going to butt heads. I just think Gabe's smart enough to realize what this is.
Yeah.
No, I hear you on that. Two like, side stories that kind of came into my head when I heard about this. All right, one is, it looks like that Middleton is going away from the analytics, or he doesn't like the way that Kapler and Maley and those guys were teaching the analytics of it all. So the popular name, if you get rid of a Gabe Kapler, was Joe Girardi.
Yeah.
He was also analytically driven.
He literally had a huge binder, a three-ring binder he would keep with him in the dugout that drove the New York media nuts.
Right.
And it was his analytics binder. So Girardi... I think the difference is I don't think Gabe's baseball gut is great at times, where I think Girardi's is. So they're both a marriage of old school baseball player meets new school analytics. I just think Girardi probably has a better gut.
Right. Okay. Well, that was one of them. The other one was Charlie is a huge fan of Michael Franco's.
Yeah, he is.
He talks to Anthony a lot. He said, Anthony, this kid can hit.
Get him back up here.
Well, that's a thing.
Get him back up here now with Charlie.
If you get Michael Franco back, Charlie has a lot of pull.
You saw him play Kingery last night. He made a nice grab with the glove going over towards shortstop, breaking left, bobbled it, getting out of his hand. Because it's not his natural position.
Yeah.
He's not a damn third baseman.
Yeah.
Can you just play Franco? This is ridiculous.
He's not a good base runner either.
And by the way, you know, we said it's a lose-lose for Gabe. Our buddy Violation Greg texts in, actually, to me, and he said, this is a win situation for Gabe if they make the playoffs.
Yeah.
You can't move on from a second-year manager that made the playoffs.
Good point. So that is a good point.
There is a win option.
Even though Charlie will get most of the praise for
it.
It'll be hard to part with Gabe because he is a big part of it.
I still think it's going to take a lot for them to part with Gabe. Unless that comes from Middleton himself. I think he will be here next year.
I think Middleton made a big statement yesterday. Not saying he's going to, but it makes me lean towards that way. Dom in Maryland, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Dom?
Gentlemen, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Talk to you, Trey. Big fan. I just want to say, first of all, I'm just glad Charlie's back. I mean, even if they keep him as a hitting coach, they got to do it beyond this year, though. I mean, I'm cool with him being there. If Gabe's going to stay, I'm cool with it if Charlie's there. If not, then I'm just tuned out like I've been. You know what I mean? And once they started getting too out of control, I said, you know what? I can't take it. You know what I mean? Because I love Charlie. And I love good coaches, which is why I wanted to say that. Is it weird that I think Doug Peterson is underappreciated?
By the Philadelphia fans or by the national?
You name it. I just think he's underappreciated. The dude
really?
To the playoffs two of his first 3 years, right? He won a Super Bowl in the second, wasn't it? Last year, if Alshon, who's my favorite player on the Eagles, doesn't drop that ball, which he catches 9.5 out of 10 times,
right?
Who says where we go or where we don't go?
I never got that feeling that he was underappreciated.
Nah, I feel like he's.
Yeah, I think
he's even better than what they're saying to you. Like, he's such a good leader of men. Like, I just watched a clip they put on of him on the Eagles app yesterday. As soon as they uploaded it, I watched it. And he was talking about unleashing fury on everybody they play this year. You know what I mean? And the dude just knows how to talk. Like, every time they go on a road trip, he talks about, you guys got to commit to each other. For the next 3 weeks, you guys got to commit, make a commitment. Gentlemen, like me, like, and talking about unleashing fury, that's my kind of football coach, because that's what I want my team to do.
Yeah.
Just unleash fury. Just be angry, even on offense.
Well, also, too, now, Doug played the game. So, yeah, so he still has that competitive nature in him, and I don't think that would ever leave, and I think that plays a lot into how he addresses his team and how he works the locker room.
Well, I love that aspect,
yeah.
And I think that's what separates him from most other coaches,
mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Because yeah.
Like that part right there, he can touch, you know, he has in common with the players.
And yeah.
I really do appreciate him as our coach.
Yeah, I do too, Don. Appreciate the phone call. I never got that feeling, though. I don't see, you know, national pundits going out there saying, oh, he's overrated, and, you know, he's only had the one good season. He was 9-7 and 7-9 in his other two seasons. I don't, you know, you win a Super Bowl, that carries over for a few years.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so I never got that feeling. Did you, Jim?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. I just got a tweet that I find strange. It said,
Toughho.net?
I recommend you not talk about the Phillies anymore, because win or lose, all you do is complain, and it's getting tiresome.
Oh, okay.
What?
Don't listen.
What exactly is positive to talk about this year?
Yeah, I mean, they're still in a fight for a wild card. Yeah.
Who has exceeded or met expectations?
Yeah, look, your expectations are so high coming into this year, and we were all so excited, and we talked excitedly about this team. So don't say we always talk negative. We talked excitedly about this team.
Yes.
This year has been a disappointment.
Yes.
For the expectations that
mostly
you had.
Mostly negative. So negative, they just made a, you know, what some would say is a drastic move with 44 games left in the year, 43 now. Like, I'm sorry, what's there to be positive about outside of your two games back?
Yeah, you can have a negative tone when you're looking at things honestly. And if you're being honest with yourself with this Phillies team, if you're going to categorize it either they've achieved their expectations.
You're fourth place
or
in your own division.
Yeah, you're in fourth place in your own division. The guy you paid $300 million for isn't over 250.
I'm sorry, am I supposed to be positive about Bryce Harper not hitting a double in 20 days? Am I supposed to be positive about Rhys Hoskins hitting 186 or 184 since the All-Star break?
About them relying on Vinny Velasquez, Zach Eflin, and Nick Pivetta to be your 3, 4, and 5 starters?
I'm supposed to be positive when Rhys Hoskins and Scott Kingery have another infield pop-up with men in scoring position? Like, I'm sorry, I don't see where I'm supposed to be positive with this team outside that they're still in a hunt. And they're lucky they're in a hunt, because that second wild card spot is garbage and you have 500 teams basically competing for it.
Somebody triggered Jamie, didn't they, Trey?
I mean,
took the glasses off. He's he's going nuts over here.
Oh, you're being too negative.
What the hell's there to be positive about?
Willie from Philly, what's going on, buddy? You're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Willie, Willie, what's up, buddy?
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Willie.
On the point I wanted to make, the move with Charlie just brought hope back to the fan base. Because after Gabe, it was definitely dying. So Charlie is a breath of fresh air.
I don't doubt you there at all.
And in reference to the Eagles, hello?
Hello.
Yes. Yeah, in reference to the Eagles?
Uh-huh.
I'm looking to be disappointed. Because this is my first Eagle game with my children. And to actually say, you know, not knowing any of the players, able to, you know, enlighten my daughters, it's a problem.
You say you're going to your first game, Willie?
Yes, for me and my daughters. And all to right. see people.
All right, Willie, sorry, yeah. We're having some troubles there. I don't know what's going on, but I hope you enjoy that first game there. There's nothing better than your first Eagles game.
I remember mine. Mine was a 10-9 win over the Packers. I was sitting up in the 700 level with my dad. They won the game. I believe it was a last-second field goal to beat the Packers. They were down 9-7. I want to say it was... Was it Chris Bonio? No, it might have been...
Wow.
May have been just before Chris Bonio. But I remember... It was the first time, like, a drunk 700 level dude, stranger, like, I hugged.
Like, oh, really?
Like, the whole stadium was going nuts. You jumping up and down. And, like, people just started hugging each other. And some, like, big, burly, like, drunk 700-level dude, like, I was, like, maybe 11, 12, I want to say, roughly. I picked me up and was like, yeah! And I was like, this is
totally normal.
Nothing wrong with that.
I wasn't worried about that at all. I was like, this is great.
I was older when I went to my first Eagles game because it was Randall Cunningham's first ever start as an Eagle.
Wow.
They played... I believe
was there a was buzz for charge. Randall? Like
it wasn't because it was the end of Jaworski and Randall had been playing third downs and the Eagles were bad, so there wasn't a buzz because he wasn't a good thrower. And
where
he just
was he drafted? I don't even know that actually.
I know he went to UNLV. Wasn't he a second rounder?
Yeah, Kenny Mayne was his backup at UNLV.
That's right. But I was old enough. I went with my boy Rock. And we were old enough that we had his two nephews with us, and it was a rainy day, so they had these huge, oversized raincoats, and we stuffed as many beers in there as we possibly could. So I was older when I hit my first Eagles
game.
What
was your first Eagles game? 1998 rookie year?
Yeah, 1998 rookie year, man.
There it is.
Looking it up. We played the Jets.
Do you remember that game at all?
No.
And this is Rodney P, right?
Yes. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I remember playing against Atlanta, though, and that was September 13th.
That's your first opening day. That was your opening day.
No, we played against Seattle first. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Why do you remember Atlanta?
Because I remember talking to who was the DN at the time. Man, I can't think of his
name. Why is the name Abrams jumping in my mind?
Jonathan Abrams wasn't one of their best, but I think he was a little later.
Yeah, I can't think of his name right now.
But you went against him?
Yeah, and I talked to him afterwards. I don't know. I can't. I don't know. I have to look it up. But anyway, I was talking to him afterwards just kind of getting some pointers from him, you know, with just my set and everything, and he was just, he's a big pass rush guy.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Huh.
I don't know.
And you had a good game.
The defensive ends were Lester Archimbo and Chuck Smith?
Chuck Smith.
Okay, yeah,
it was Chuck Smith. I was talking to Chuck
Smith. 8.5 sacks that year.
He didn't have one in that game.
I don't know. I just remember it after the game.
Are most guys cool when you come up to them like that? Like, sharing techniques?
But I wanted to talk to him about my stance and just how I was
going. What he saw?
Yeah, and he was like, dude, like, every time you're in your stance, your butt drops right before you get ready to go. So, like, if you're in a three-point stance.
And so he told you a tell.
Yeah, he gave me a tell.
Yeah.
So he was
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, so
that is pretty cool.
Talking to Chuck Smith afterwards, like, look, man, you know, what can I do to kind of help out what I'm doing? He was like, dude, you got to change your stance a little bit because anytime you get ready to go, your butt drops. So he was saying that he would watch my butt and go.
That's a drop. You can grab that one, all right? Watching Trey's butt and going.
Because, I mean, when you look at the Colts back in the day, when you had Freeney and all of them back then, they never looked at the ball. They looked for tails. And if you really watch film, a lot of offensive linemen have tails where their ankle shifts or something shifts before they go. Mm. And it's like, you don't even worry about looking at the ball. I look for a tail.
That's the secret of the game.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll hit on Trey's butt phone a little bit more when we get back. Charlie Manuel talk. Also, there is a uniform. I don't want to call it a violation, but something that bugs me that a lot of guys in the NFL, quarterbacks and kickers mostly, are wearing while they're on the grass. Time at the Fanatic, 8:43.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Morning show, 97.5 The Fanatic. Bob Cooney, Trey Thomas, Jamie Lynch. We got Pat Egan behind the glass. Sam Wilson giving our updates. We're just chilling here, right? That's what we do. We just chill. Well, you want to know how else to chill? Well, Coors Light wants to know also. They want to see how you're keeping it cool this summer. Are you hanging at the beach, brushing your teeth in the shower? I texted a friend, or a friend texted me yesterday. He goes, I brush my teeth in the shower. What's so gross about that? He said, I also shave in the shower. I said, don't you see what's so gross about it? You have your toothbrush sitting there and you're shaving?
Next to your beard stuff?
Yeah. Like, what is that? But I don't know. It's a fascination. That's how some people chill. Whatever it is, send us your made-to-chill photo with just you in the picture, and you can enter to win a week with your friends in Sea Isle, courtesy of Coors Light. Close your summer with a chill week at the shore from August 17th to the 24th. That's right, a whole week down the shore. All on Coors Light. You only have now through today to enter to win. Go to the contest page at 975thefanatic.com for details and official contest rules, and then be available on August 17th through the 24th. One random entry will be selected to win the prize of a week down the shore. Remember, only you can be at the in the photo and nobody else. And Jamie, you went on there yesterday. How easy is it to do?
It's incredibly easy. Just go to the contest page right on the website. It's one click away. Upload a photo. Boom. You can have a free shore house for a week. I've drank many Coors Lights down in Sea Isle before. I can chill pretty well there.
Yeah. For a week with friends.
I'm going to drink a Coors Light.
A little golden hour on the beach between 4 and like 7.
Oh, and then
golden
on that
couple hours.
On that Saturday, the 24th, you got to be out. So what do? You head out and you go right to Xfinity Live for FanFest.
Yeah, we got a couple big names coming by.
Oh,
this
my
year.
Gosh. Allen Iverson. We got Tobias Harris. And just mentioned yesterday, DeSean Jackson.
Brought to you by FanDuel.
That's right. So August 24th is not only Tommy Cooney's birthday. But it's also going to be one of the best days of the year. Just like our fantasy football drafts and all those days that you carve out during the year, you say, oh, that's the best
and
day.
And I got a fantasy football show again this Saturday with Eric Carabel live at Workhorse Brewing out in King of Prussia from 12 to 4. So come on out, and if you want to pick Eric's brain, go for it.
And what about yours?
I did once go 17-0 in a football fantasy football season.
Really?
Yeah, it was the year B. West broke out.
It was
B. West.
You know why he broke out that year?
Because I drafted him.
No, because he was running behind Trey Thomas. Come on now.
I think he found out I drafted him. He his confidence went up and up. It was him and Braylon Edwards. It was the one.
Oh, wow. Braylon Edwards had?
He caught like 17 touchdown passes one year, and I got him real late and undefeated. It's in my LinkedIn profile.
That's what Finn. The importance of Jamie Lynch. Connor, on the mobile. What's going on, buddy? You're on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Hanging in there. I just wanted to touch on that one caller's statement about Doug being underappreciated, and he said both. I think Doug is appreciated amongst the Philly fans, but mm-hmm. I do agree that nationally he doesn't really get the love I think he deserves. I think for some reason Sean McVay gets so much more praise nationally and on media compared to Doug when Doug's 2-0 against him head-to-head. And really, I mean, he's got the Super Bowl. He has more playoff wins than Sean McVay. I don't really understand the whole love behind McVay and Doug kind of gets.
Well, because Sean McVay can recall plays that he called as the offensive coordinator for the Redskins 5 years ago. So he's brilliant.
He has excellent memory.
No, but like that kind of all went into the Sean McVay hype machine. You know what I mean? Like that, he's a good coach, but Doug Peterson's 2-0 versus him and has a Super Bowl ring and beat Bill Belichick. So Doug is the superior coach until proven otherwise.
Agreed. And the fact that he didn't get one vote for Coach of the year we won the Super Bowl.
That was a joke.
Was ridiculous.
And the fact that Carson Wentz didn't win the MVP was also a joke.
Yeah.
Agreed. I mean, injury out there. No, I think it's, I mean, no one likes us. We don't care, right?
And exactly right. All right, thanks a lot, Karen. Appreciate it. It seems like that Doug always gets lumped in with Sean McVay for some reason. Like, I've heard this argument so many places.
Exact time. They each got the same quarterback out of the same draft class. Like, there are natural ties to it.
And maybe if you're Doug Peterson and you haven't won that Super Bowl, or if you're a Doug Peterson fan, maybe that bothers you. But I'm at the point, I'm like, so what? Like, for all the reasons you just said, James, he's 2-0 against him. He's won a Super Bowl. McVay hasn't.
In my opinion, Doug Peterson has Sean McVay on a leash, and he's walking him up and down the sidelines.
Yeah.
And until proven otherwise, that's how I vision it.
And McVay's the one doing the yipping and doing all the, here we go, turn the music up, here we go.
I got to have a coach hold. He's got to hold my belt back because I'm such a meathead. Oh, I love football.
Yeah.
Like, cool, Sean, cool.
And that's easy for TV to pick up
the
on.
The hype machine is so, like, overblown with that dude.
Well,
he's a good coach. But
he's
like,
a good coach.
People act like he's reinventing the game.
See, I don't get
Well, what he does
that.
Is kind of, you know.
He's a creative offensive mind. There's no doubt about it. But the hype machine is way out of control.
The hype machine is just out of control.
It's like the Nick Pivetta, the same PR firm that handled the Nick Pivetta preseason hype machine handles Sean McVay's hype machine.
Wow, that's a wild comparison. There was a Nick Pivetta hype machine?
Yeah.
I didn't.
Spring training.
I missed that one.
Oh, the national guys, the local guys. Oh, Nick Pivetta looks great. Nick Pivetta this. Nick Pivetta that. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Wow.
How'd that work out for you?
Huh. I'll take McVay over Nick Pivetta.
Well, so
any day.
Will I.
Yeah. Right. Kevin in Doylestown, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Kevin.
Hey.
How are you, buddy?
Doing good. How you guys doing?
Great. What's going on?
So I wanted to ask about the Phillies. I was missed your show all last week. Was on vacation, but while I was gone, I heard they sent Franco down, optioned him to AAA. I totally miss that. I don't understand why. I mean, they praised him so much. Kapler said how great he is to have in the lineup, but then it seemed like they easily sent him down to AAA to bring up I don't know who. All of a sudden, I see Rodriguez in the lineup and Miller. How are those guys better than Franco?
They're not.
Yeah.
Sean Rodriguez is a friend of Gabe Kapler.
So how did they come to the decision to option him down to AAA, and how did they explain that, I guess, to the media, to the fans?
I mean, Hazley will be back up shortly. 97.5
The Fanatic. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.